Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. My guest this week is West Donegal man Charlie Boyle, who's been at the forefront of customer service excellence for many years, providing invaluable support to numerous people in what can be termed the experience economy, all across Ireland and abroad. A fellow of the Institute of Leadership and Management UK, he is the CEO of Customer Service Excellence Ireland, based in the GTech Innovation Hub in Gwydir. Over the past decade or so, he has seen his company develop, building up clients not just in Ireland, but also overseas, and notably in the Middle East. His expertise in customer relations and new business development has been instrumental in advancing service excellence across various sectors. And he's certainly upbeat not just about the outlook for his company, but for Donegal. Indeed, he believes that people from Donegal often really excel when it comes to customer engagement and service. He's developing a human skills institute based out of Donegal, and further employment and opportunities beckon. He's certainly a busy man, and when I caught up with him, he had just returned from Dublin, where he is involved in a customer experience program at the iconic Book of Kells at Trinity College, which incidentally attracts around 1 million visitors a year. He has also just published a book titled The Future is Human, which has as its subtitle Unlocking the Skills That Will Define Success in an Evolving World. We'll hear more about this very interesting book later, but I began by asking him to outline to me a little bit about his business and what exactly Customer Service Excellence Ireland is all about.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, so Customer Service Excellence Ireland is a program or a company, I suppose, that I set up in 2014. I was based at that stage in the CoLab in Letterkenny beside the ATU, where there was, you know, great help in setting that up. I had come back from the UK and I knew I wanted to do something in the area of customer service, but I didn't know exactly what it was. So I suppose the best way to describe it is that it's a program which includes measurement of customer service standards, training and the improvement of customer service standards, and also the recognition of customer service standards at that level of excellence. And I suppose over the last 11 years of the setting up of the company, we've been very, very lucky to get, you know, contracts with the likes of Fulch Ireland, with Retail Ireland, which has all of the big players, all of the big well-known stores and companies involved in that, but also more and more getting pulled into other sectors like financial services or civil engineering. And at the minute, I think we're working in 9 sectors. So yeah, it's growing. I wouldn't say it's growing at a brilliant rate, but it's growing at a rate that we're able to scale, but also being able to look at more than, you know, when we talk about customer service, people always think about the customer service at the counter to the customer. But I suppose a lot of our work is what we would call internal customer service or company culture. So we're not only looking at the customer service that is received by the paying customer, but that which is needed internally, because you can't get good customer service from a company unless the company is working well internally as well. And that's probably the difference from ourselves as a company or as a business.
Now, you're from Mulladough. Just give us a little glimpse of the whole business journey to date. You mentioned the company set up back in 2014, but prior to that, what was your chief interest?
Well, yeah, I suppose I had been in the UK for 13 years, and not just prior to that. I'd come back around 2010, 2011, and I probably was very aware, and working in the UK, I worked with different pub groups over there, either as a manager of pubs or clusters of pubs, and I suppose the thing that I was aware of there was the importance of customer service and in relation to sales. And I was lucky enough, I suppose, with a few companies that I had worked with over there in always either achieving sales targets or doing really well at sales. But I could never really figure it out. Like, if you asked me, what is it you're doing? I wouldn't have known because I didn't have a primary degree in this. Like a lot of people my age, I went straight into the world of work from school. So I suppose when I came back, I had wanted to research this. I wanted to see, you know, what relationship does internal customer service have on external customer service to the customer? And what relationship does that have on sales? So is it important to have good customer service, or is it just a nice-to-have thing? And can sales work very successfully if the customer service isn't good? So I was lucky enough while I was, I suppose, in the environment of the ATU, which was in the CoLab, setting up this business, to be invited to apply for a master's, and that master's was to be able to research something that you were doing at work. And I remember meeting Ewan McIntyre one day, and he was doing the master's himself. And, you know, he sort of said, look, it's something you should do, because he had been using it on his own business, on Max Mace. And, you know, I'm sure like myself, Chris, you know, you're an observer of what he does there very, very simply. And to me, I thought, right, that's customer service in action. And yet he's able to do a research through a master's on his business. So I thought, right, okay, I'll try that out. And, you know, I'd done that, and that was exciting, you know, doing that and getting involved in that particular study. And I think it opens it up to so much more. It's not really the content of that academic study. It's really looking at the simplicity of what it is you're trying to do, and to look deeper into that. So that's something we've carried on doing. So we've carried on research and continuously research, and what is it that the customer wants now? You know, what's happened during COVID, after COVID? What's happened with digital disruption in the world? Is there still a need for a high level of human skills, or has it gone digitally too far to one way? And again, looking at what the research and what the consumers globally are saying, what locally they're saying, you know, from a context of maybe the island of Ireland, and then maybe more specifically, what are the expectations of customers into different offers? So we're able to advise the organizations or the companies from the research that we're looking at. And you know, that's been something we're trying to pursue. I suppose we're trying to get more and more funding, trying to tap into research funds that are available. Because my belief is that I think there's a strong argument that Donegal could nearly own this. And what I mean by that is that customer service, that sales ability, that ability to have a high level of human skills involved in, you know, your offer and your, you know, the best practice examples. And I know I'm being totally and absolutely biased from here, but I would hear people saying outside of the county that they would employ Donegal people on a scale of 2 or 3 to 1 because they have that sort of natural, I suppose we would say in Donegal, away with them. But really, when it's research and you ask the academics about it, they'll say yes, that warmth, that welcome, that connection, that empathy, that emotional intelligence is as important today as it ever was, even in a digitally disrupted world.
So when you were starting up the business and you're thinking, how am I going to make money out of this? I suppose in its simplest terms, Charlie, the service you were offering was you were going to give people expertise just on the whole area of customer service. And you mentioned there, I think, the word measurement. So give us an example of your early customers and what you were doing for them.
Yeah, and that's a good question, because it does take us back to the beginning. So the first contract the first contract we got of note, and we had it up until about 6 months ago, so we had that contract for 11 months, was the evaluation of 30 shopping centres in Northern Ireland and the UK, and they were managed by a company based in Belfast called Lambertsmith Hampton. Now, some of them would be well known to us. The Foyle side in Derry was one. Victoria Square in Belfast was another. And then, you know, there was a few others in Northern Ireland, but mainly they were in the UK, London, Birmingham, around that area. And our job, I suppose, or, you know, we tendered for it at the time, and it was very, very early days. I had worked for a company in the UK that used to do evaluations in the Marriott Hotel Group. So I knew basically how evaluations worked. And I, you know, basically an evaluation of any organization or any business is mapping the journey that the customer takes through it and then giving it a score overall. So, for example, in a shopping center, you might have what's called advanced communications. The first thing we're going to do when we, you know, plan to visit a shopping center, we're going to Google it, we're going to look at it the night before, and 80% of those searches will be done on a mobile device. So what level, you know, of quality, if we're going to the Foyle site tomorrow, what level of quality is their website, is the information that's there? So the journey's already started before we actually go to the shopping center. And then after that, it's, you know, the car parking experience, the experience of going inside, what's the ambience like, the lighting, what's the food offers, quality of the toilets. You know, we go in and out to the stores. On average, you'll go into 7 stores in the shopping center. So we would measure 7 of those stores. And that we would get paid. The early income would come from the company, Lambertsmith Hampton, paying us to do evaluations on 30 shopping centres. Now, because we had the evaluation and because we had the, I suppose, the intelligence from those evaluations and the information, we were best placed to put together a training programme. And the training programme would be based on the evaluation, where, you know, there was opportunity for improvement, where things were going really, really well. So then we started offering training to them, because we were already doing the evaluation, we were building up a relationship with them. And then what we started doing is we introduced a recognition program. So these 30 shopping centres started competing against each other to see who was the best, but not only, you know, what shopping centre is the best, but this thing of capturing excellence in action and catching people in rather than out. So our evaluation was never really mystery shopping, which sometimes can be a bit, you know, underhand, maybe a bit sneaky, some people would say. Ours was the opposite. We were trying to capture excellence in action. We were, you know, our mantra always is we're trying to catch people in, not out. And, you know, catching a staff member, performing at a very high level, writing a paragraph of praise about them can have a huge impact on that person and those around them. So then we, you know, we probably started learning, okay, we've got 3 pillars here, the evaluation, the training, the recognition, and we're getting paid for all 3 of those. And sometimes we got the payment or the pricing wrong and we were doing work and not getting paid well enough for it. You'd have to go back to the company and argue an increase. But then it gave us a template to be able to go to other companies. You know, even, you know, at one stage, a well-known retailer, which I can't name at the minute, but we were doing 40 of their stores. And we were doing the same thing. So we were doing the evaluation. You would get pulled back in to do the training, or in other words, to fix those items that came up in the evaluation, and then to introduce a recognition program as well. And I suppose the follow-on to that was we sometimes then found that there was something not quite right internally, that the customer service was impacted by the fact that maybe the internal customer service or the communication or how they were treating each other wasn't that great. So we came up with a measurement for internal customer service and we started adding that on. And, it, you know, you mentioned the word expertise. We were learning an awful lot from these businesses. And of course, because we were doing the training and you were working alongside the frontline staff and the managers, we were sponges for that information. So we became a nearly a conduit of that information and being able to pass it on to other sectors. And, you know, that's kind of how it's developed, really. You know, we would see ourselves as partners with them rather than contractors to them. And, you know, it's just been interesting because there's been so many changes in how the economy works, and the demands of the consumer or the customer, you know, have become greater. We're paying more money for things. I'll, you know, just give you an example on it, and I can name the business this time. We were working with Volkswagen Ireland last week, and the point they were making was the service of a car has doubled in price in the last 4 years. And that's, you know, the service of a car maybe has gone from 150 or 200 to 300 or 400. And people want better service for that price. So if we're paying more for something, we obviously expect a better experience for it. And therefore, there's a focus on that. The price of goods have gone up. The price of food has gone up. So it would be expected that the customer experience overall should also be going up. Now, it's not, it doesn't happen all the time, but it at least allows the company to have a greater focus on it. And at times we take advantage, or we're able to take advantage of that, and offer, you know, training or evaluation or the recognition or all three of them.
And would there be cases that you would go in, you'd have a contract with a company over a period of time, and you make your recommendations and you've worked with them, and then the contract ends, and then sometimes would they follow up? Would there be like a retainer, and that you'd go in periodically and assess them again?
Well, I suppose in the example that I gave for Lamberts Mathampton and those 30 shopping centres, that's exactly what happened there. A lot of the time, unfortunately, and it's one of the battles, like, being honest here, sometimes a company might ask us to come in and do a training session with their staff as if it's going to change everything. And we're sometimes reluctant to do that because that can have minimal effect. You know, going in and having a one-day training session or a half-day training session is going to have minimal effect. So what we're trying to convince the company is to think long-term. And if they feel that customer service is important, that they should invest in it long-term, and therefore to put a program in place that lasts maybe a couple of years and that has evaluation maybe twice or three times a year, that has training twice or three times a year, and starts creating a recognition program internally. And they may also then do a measurement of their own internal customer service, how they're, you know, communicating internally. And that's probably what we're trying to do more so in the last couple of years, is to convince companies to see it more as a program rather than a one-off event. That being said, we don't turn down any training, because sometimes if you get into the company and even do the training day, it could be the ignition that they want. So you could ignite that hunger for more of it. You get the staff sort of, you know, saying things like, well, I always knew I should be doing that, but it's not something I was doing, but I can see now the sense in doing it. Because really what we're saying is, this is what the customer expects, and this is how easy it is to deliver, but maybe, you know, that's just not been done. But when you have the evaluation, sometimes it reminds me of the MRI out in Letterkenny Hospital, you know, and you don't just go out and say, I'm not well, and the doctor will say, okay, well, I'll treat you. They're going to find out where the pain is. And the evaluation is a bit like the MRI. It'll pinpoint exactly where the problem is, and then you're able to go in and target it with a training fix rather than trying to guess where the issue might be. So an overall program, although it's going to cost more over a longer period of time, that investment in that is important, because something like 80% plus of organizations will say that customer service is one of their top three most important things. However, only 1 in 10 businesses invest what they should invest in customer service as a program overall. So there's an anomaly there.
Can you bracket customer service in along with the likes of advertising and marketing, insofar as people know that this is an investment in the company. It's spending money on something that you'll get a return, but sometimes it can be hard to measure. And, you know, you have your budget there. How much do you allocate to customer service? How much do you advocate to advertising? How much to marketing? Are there general percentages in certain industries?
Yeah, and again, really good question, Chris. I mean, we read a very, very interesting, I think it came out of Germany, I think it was perhaps even a Horizon, a European Union Horizon research that was done that suggests that for customer service, that a company should be investing 5% of their turnover, not their profit, 5% of their turnover back into training for the whole area of customer service or the customer experience. Now, the customer experience is much wider and, you know, it's broader than customer service. Customer service tends to be the connection between two humans. The customer experience is the overall customer experience of, you know, parking your car outside, going into the restaurant itself, coming out of the restaurant, you know, or, you know, the purchasing of a car. It could be three or four visits to the car dealership. It could be, you know, the human interaction. It could be how quick you got the price. You know, what was your expectation of the car being delivered? The time of that, how was that communicated? So there's, yeah, that figure of the return on investment is that a company should be spending 5% of their turnover from this recent research that we've seen into the overall customer experience and, you know, through programs. And there, you know, we would sometimes ask a company, you know, what percentage of your turnover would you say that you're spending on customer experience? They might be, you know, reluctant to give you the figure because you're asking them turnover and maybe questions that are more sensitive than they would be in the UK. You know, for some reason in the UK, because a lot of companies are large multiples, where in Ireland, a lot of the companies are family companies, and they're maybe not as likely to give you that figure. But that's, you know, that's a kind of figure that if we were asked what percentage should you be spending, we would be saying around 5%.
Now, when it all started off, Charlie, was it just yourself? You were just self-employed, and over time, did you bring on other employees?
Yeah, that's the way it worked. And, you know, I suppose, like a lot of small, medium enterprises, you get it wrong a lot of times before you get it right. You know, sometimes, you know, in those early years, it was tough. It was tough stuff. It was, you know, you've been in that game yourself as a small, medium enterprise, and I often just say it's a blood sport. It can be pretty tough going, and, you know, perhaps at times, what the likes of trainers, specialized trainers, it's best to take them in and then let them go. So in other words, pull them in on a contract base, identify your trainers that are good at certain things, delivering in certain sectors, and employ them on a contract basis, because maybe you don't have to retain them. Maybe you don't have the money to retain them, which is the other thing. And, you know, then in the early days as well, you know, not charging the premium that you need to charge to make a profit on it. So being busy and maybe not profitable. So having to make all those mistakes and learning from that. And I think it's a continuous cycle of learning, you know, and you have to unlearn and then relearn again. And that would have happened, you know, in the last year or two as well. So you become more lean. We're very, very lucky with the staff we've been able to recruit on an administrative basis. You know, somebody to look after the accounts to make sure that, you know, it's everything is kept, you know, right. So you always have your tax clearance, that you can tender for work in the national procurement, because everything is done well administratively, or, you know, through your bookkeeping and all of that. There are stuff that I would be just absolutely hopeless at. So the nearly the model of recruitment has been women returning to the workplace after being off 10, 15, 20 years. And it's not that there's so many of them, but their skill set I just find is fantastic. And I don't think it's just a West Donegal thing. So we've been very, very lucky, you know, with the staff that we have, the people that we would use for the evaluations are all people from the local area here. And when you explain to them what we're asking them to do, that, you know, they're thinking, oh, that would be really interesting to do that. And the next thing they know, they're on a plane going over to London to do evaluations and maybe five or six shopping centres over a period of days. So, yeah, so like that, we have four people employed all the time, full time. And then the trainers, we tend to use a model of pulling the trainers in to do the specialised training. But, you know, I'm still out doing training myself. I was just telling you beforehand, I'm just back from 2 days of training with the Book of Kells experience in Dublin, and that's a contract we've had for the last 2 years. You know, one of Ireland's busiest tourist attractions, and the retail unit that they have there is said to be the busiest shop in Ireland per square foot. So we were involved in training there with quite a number of staff. And we also do the evaluation of the visitor experience there. And that's hugely important to the country. And it's great for us to be involved in that as well, because we're also learning from it, you know. And it's the reason I'm mentioning that is we have done 4 days now in June with Trinity College, the Book of Kells. And we will have learned so much from that. And we'll sit down, we use two different trainers. So we'll sit down and we'll sort of debrief, and what did we learn from that? What are they doing that we could pass on to other companies that are not in competition with them? And that other company might be an engineering company. We'll say, well, this is something that we saw them doing up at the Book of Kells experience. And I don't know if you know the story that's gone on there at the minute. I mean, they've moved every single book, thousands and thousands of books, from the long library or the long room into storage, because they're refurbishing that whole section and then moving the books back inside. But the show must go on, so the experience is going on, but they've made it interactive and they've made it digital for 2 or 3 years while they do that. And their numbers have actually gone up. They haven't gone down, they've gone up. So they're very determined to keep the customer experience, to keep the visitor experience at that level of excellence. And, you know, that's what we've been doing there in the month of June. But that, you know, that's exciting for us. And, you know, we're very proud that, you know, we're based in the Gaeltacht here, we're based in the GTEC down in Gweedore at the moment, and that we're able to create programs like that there and fly up to Dublin, you know, 40 minutes, go in, deliver the programs, and then come back down here and prepare it for next year and make it better, you know, next year, but also to use what we learned there or what we found is working well for them, and being able to help out other organisations doing that. So, you know, we do quite a lot of that, you know, passing on information from one sector to another. Now, we wouldn't work with a retailer and pass the information on to a competitor of theirs, but you can use it in other sectors.
I'm speaking with Charlie Boyle, the CEO of Customer Service Excellence Ireland. Charlie, just wondering, from the small beginnings back in 2014, how did you expand internationally, and how did you build up the contacts abroad? Did the Donegal and the Irish diaspora have a certain advantage for you?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Like everybody from Donegal, you're proud to be operating from here. The work that we've done, I suppose, in the Middle East in the last couple of years, yeah, came about, funnily enough, there was a really, you know, a good contact, Mohammed Farouk, who worked with a company called Exelidia out there. And he contacted me through LinkedIn, which, you know, can be a powerful platform for a company like ourselves, I find anyway. And he contacted me and he said he was coming to Ireland. He was looking to create a partnership in Ireland, and he had been invited by Invest Northern Ireland, and, you know, he was pretty much going to Belfast. And I said to him, well, you'll need to come down to Donegal for a couple of days. And he came down really, really impressed. It was in the middle of winter. He had never been in Ireland before. So he very impressed with the county and, I suppose, the energy that was involved in the likes of technology around the Primerica and Optum and Letterkenny at the time. And that was the first contract. Dubai Islamic Bank were looking for a program on customer experience, and he had tendered for that and he won the tender. So he was looking to subcontract out elements of that work. And what we were able to do, because we had done a lot of work with credit unions in Ireland, and there was a connection because Islamic banks lend in a certain way that we felt was very similar to credit unions. So in writing up the program, you know, that was done from West Donegal. There's a very, very strong Irish community in Dubai, and I suppose we connected in with them. Enterprise Ireland have a presence there as well. And then we found that we got this running contract, of that ongoing contract for a year with Dubai Islamic Bank, and that's led to another piece of work that we're doing at the minute with a shipping company, totally unrelated, but through the same network out there. And yeah, the diaspora would have been involved in that. So one of the largest shipping companies in the world were then looking for a customer experience program. And this is where it gets exciting, I suppose, in that one minute you're doing retail out in the foil side in Derry, and then you're thinking, okay, how does this transfer over to a shipping company? And a lot of the principles are the same. A lot of it is preparing the Omani residents to come back from shore, because only 10% of the countries out there are native to the country itself. So 90% of the country is made up of expats. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to develop those who are from the countries, either Qatar or Oman in this case, and to develop their skills in a customer experience basis. So that's the program that we're writing up at the moment. We actually have a meeting with one of those companies to try and get, you know, more work out there, because, you know, that's money coming into the country rather than circulating and doing the work just in Ireland. So again, it tends to land quite well out there. You know, we've done, you know, 2 years of work out there, and the feedback from that has been very, very good. But I suppose it's because we're working hard at that research piece. And that's the piece that we need to concentrate, I suppose, on at this minute in time, Chris. That's probably where we are as a business, is just looking at, you know, how do we become better at researching, and can Donegal or West Donegal create a sort of hub that has that research into customer service or customer experience from a global basis, and how do we expand out? And there's avenues for that, because the likes of access to support from the likes of Horizon, which is a European Union fund, we've already approached three universities to help us out with that. They would have experience in research, and I suppose we have the experience and the customer experience element of it, and by combining both of that, you know, that's probably the next thing we're going to try and do is to be a research hub as well.
And being the research hub, you would hope to bring people certainly to the GTEC building there in Derrybeg?
Yeah, and you know, we have to in the county, I believe very, very strongly, we have to stop this thing of having to go to Dublin or having to go to London. It can happen equally as successfully and as well in West Donegal because of connectivity. And that's something that we need to be proving, that it can be done here. Because if this was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you'd be thinking, right, well, you need to go to one of the hubs. You need to go to Dublin or you need to go to London to create a research institute, for example. But you don't. And the institute also doesn't have to be bricks and mortar. It could be virtual, but, we're lucky to have a facility like the GTEC in West Donegal, as, you know, the likes of the CoLab and Letterkenny, or the new Alpha Innovation Centre, which is going to be built in Letterkenny. So we can create in Donegal hubs for innovation, and in our case, a hub for research, And one of the earliest, you know, probably conversations we had looking at this particular horizon potential, the European Union potential, is the coordinator that we were speaking to representing the EU said that that is one of the things the EU looks at. How do we support rural communities? So if we're making the case, well, this should be based in a rural community, that's actually a plus now. Whereas 20 years ago, it might have been saying, well, you know, why would it be in West Donegal? So it's something that we would always be pushing naturally, because, you know, creating 5 jobs in West Donegal might be the same as creating 50 jobs in Dublin or 500 jobs in London. 5 jobs in West Donegal might be the difference between a primary school staying open or closing or keeping a teacher or losing a teacher. So the more that we can do to create those 5-10 jobs, the better. And, you know, our ambition still is strong to create another 5 positions through a research centre in the area of customer experience.
You've touched on the fact, Charlie, that we never stop learning, and somehow you have found the time to publish a book, The Future is Human, and it is now available. The subtitle, Unlocking the Skills That Will Define Success in an Evolving World. So tell us more. What's it all about?
Yeah, well, I suppose what's it all about is right. You know, there's a big journey in that. We could be on for another 2 hours talking about it. But one of the pieces, I suppose, I'm talking a lot about research. If we look at the skills of the future, and there's been really good study, again, based in Donegal. Retail Ireland created a fantastic Skills of the Future report about 3 years ago. And that, again, emanated from the CoLab, because Retail Ireland, SkillNet are based in the CoLab in Letterkenny. Orrin Doherty, Roisin Woods, Teresa Gallagher, fantastic team there. And they created a Skills of the Future for retail. And I was involved in writing up an element of that. And what I was really fascinated about is, if you look at the skills of the future, it's broken into 3 areas. The product knowledge that you're going to require for the sector that you're working in, the digital skills that you're going to require, and the human skills you're going to require. And the human skills are at least 50% of the skills that are going to be required for the future. So what that, again, I just became very, very curious, and I'm thinking, is education, learning and development going after the wrong rabbit? You know, are we not overdoing the digital and the digital skills training and the digital skills courses? Are we doing enough education on human skills? Are we giving enough credence to emotional intelligence? Are we putting enough into vocational training, apprenticeships, learning by doing? Are we, you know, for lifelong learners, for people who are going back to education in their 40s, are we going to tech? And technology, and I'm a big believer in it myself, I'm a big user of it. You know, I believe that most digital disruption is positive. However, I always wanted to find out more about human skills and the element of human skills, and, you know, because it's so relatable to customer experience in that area that we're in. So I had 2 options: to go back and study and do another research, which I didn't have. I probably did not have the energy to do again, because it took it out of me the first time. And it was suggested that I should write a book. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to connect local characters that I was brought up with. You know, the local shopkeeper, Murray O'Donnell, Tony Doherty, who would have founded our local GAA club. People like that there who, when you study leadership, these people had this in abundance. They didn't know they had it, but they had it. You know, there were other stories. I'm just so fascinated by, you know, the Ardmore lifeboat saving of a boat called the Stalwick during World War II, which is an under soul story of heroism and humanity and leadership and compassion and intelligence of how and what they done on that particular night. To me, it should be a movie. And I wanted to write on human skills. The book is called The Future is Human. because 50% of the skills of the future are still going to be human skills, and we mustn't forget that. We mustn't lose ourselves in the digital world. The digital should be an enhancement of the human touch, not a replacement of it. And sometimes there's a race to do something digitally, whereas there's a human way to do it. But it's not resisting digital change. And in fact, AI and human skills can work together. So this is probably the effort, the writing of this book is this effort to highlight a few things, to highlight that we can talk about human skills or the creation of a Human Skills Institute in West Donegal, because here were these people who were heroes to me under my own feet. And the more that you study leadership qualities, or the more that you study resilience, it's here in the county. You know, people from Donegal have been very, very resilient, and that's a human skill. They've also been great examples of empathy. So if you took these 32 human skills and you look at them in the book, what I've done is I've taken 20 human skills, and part of the human skill I talk about, then I talk about closer to home. In other words, this is a person that I saw, that I grew up with, that might have just organized a football match down in the field of evenings. But what impact, what social impact did that have on the people of the area? And that's probably the effort of it. So, you know, delighted over the last two years to be able to write that book. And I got a publisher in the UK called The Right Book Company. They were a great help. And yeah, it went up on Amazon last week. And we hope to do a local launch in the next month. I've had to postpone the date that I had for next week simply because we weren't sure that we were going to get the books on time. That was a bit of a mistake on my own behalf, but you know, we'll get another date and we'll get a local launch. And it's not about selling hundreds or thousands of books. It's really just maybe inspiring somebody to, you know, hear the call for let's do more on this in the county. Let's do more on customer experience, or you know, human skills, or the development of that, because it's a global interest at the minute. But I do believe that it's something that we can capture here in the county.
Certainly food for thought, and I look forward to delving through the pages and finding out much more. If people want to order the book, you said there you can get it on Amazon, and do we still have the old cliche, will it be available in all good bookshops?
It certainly will now. It'll come into the bookshops, you know, slowly over the next 6 months or so, and that's so if people just ask in their local bookshop, it can be ordered in and you know, gotten that way. And if people don't want to buy it on Amazon, they can go to their local bookshop and simply ask for The Future is Human.
And finally, Charlie, if people want to find out more about Customer Service Excellence Ireland, your website, I imagine, is probably the first port of call.
Yeah, that's just type in Customer Service Excellence Ireland or www.csei.ie. It'll take you onto the website and you can, you know, make inquiries there. But yeah, if there's any businesses out there that want to focus on their customer service or their customer experience, give us a shout and we'll have a chat. We'll have a half hour chat and see if we can add value. And if we can add value, we'll help out.
And that was Charlie Boyle, CEO of Customer Service Excellence Ireland. In other news this week, Little Ireland is marking 25 years in the country. Here in Donegal, it now employs 180 people in its 9 stores in the county, and nationally employs more than 5,500 people. Little has captured almost 14% of the Irish grocery market, according to the latest statistics, and now welcomes more than 1.5 million shoppers through its doors every week. Well, Lidl procured over €40 million worth of goods and services from 25 suppliers and business partners across Donegal last year. The latest new car sales figures were released during the week by the Society of the Irish Motor Industry. Nationally, registrations for the year to date are up 3.5% on the same period last year. Here in Donegal, new car registrations for the period January to June, that's the 251 DL plate, they were up by 3.84%, so just above the national average rise. New electric car registrations in Donegal for the first 6 months of 2025 were up by more than 45%, rising to 193 new registrations. With many people waiting for the 252 plate, June is traditionally a month of low new car registrations. In fact, there were just 31 new cars registered in the county in June. Suzuki, buoyed by a new 10-year warranty offer and interest-free loan deals, led the way with 10 units. The most popular selling brand in Donegal for the first 6 months of 2025 was Kia, with Toyota in second, Skoda third, Hyundai fourth, and Volkswagen fifth. Making up the rest of the top 10 were Suzuki, Ford, Peugeot, Dacia, and then Nissan. Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. As always, many thanks for listening in. And I'll conclude, as usual, by wishing you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead. From me, Chris Ashmore, until the next time, goodbye.